about?
Ooh, hard to get my real voice out. I feel I need to be whispering. I don't really want to be. But it was just a question of breaking that silence and sitting here up on a little bit of a rise overlooking Lake Ontario, the bluffs, beachside, Bluffers Park, on a Monday afternoon, just after 2 p.m., I've just come from a very nice course, a morning course on mindfulness. Now, I made a lot of notes, but of course I left them in the car. And maybe I'll share with you some insights from that experience. I don't know. It was in the Bluffers Park restaurant, a place where I have never been. It's a little bit pricey for me and not my kind of place. But here they had rented the second floor and provided us with, a light breakfast and coffee and juice, and then a full lunch afterwards. So that was pretty nice. And of course, it was a freebie, run by my community college, and it was aimed at program coordinators, and with the idea of incorporating some of these mindfulness practices into your teaching or planning. Maybe training students in mindfulness procedures. Very well worthwhile. I felt a bit of an imposter. I'm not a program coordinator. I'm a part-time teacher. I introduced myself as such, and he said, "Hey, that's no problem." And I really enjoyed it. We went through a number of exercises of body scan, where you just sort of pay attention to parts of your body, and they take you through, starting with your sort of left foot and all the way through and up and down, up one leg, down the other, through your body, up the arms, and it was good. And then other types of meditation, a drop and stop procedure where you try and get things out of your head to focus on a body part. And a lot of them were techniques that students could use in a classroom around stressful times when there are tests coming up. I know for sure I could do it with my students. I participated fully. I enjoyed it. Interesting little side story. If you follow this regularly, or if you pay attention, you may remember that I sent an email to somebody offering a grant to the college or bursary, and then he never replied. Well, of course, he never got it. And then I drove to his building where he's located and decided not to go in that time. This was all to do with me trying to get new host families from the college I teach at and trying to find some inn. Well, totally by coincidence, that very man I was supposed to see sat in the only vacant seat that was available, which was right beside me today. So I actually personally handed him the forms of the letter that I had emailed and he never received because I had the wrong address. It turns out he wasn't really the right guy anyway, but he led me to somebody else who might be, and it opened the doors for me. Another thing that I think was really good was, I may have mentioned, I don't remember to what extent, but a little friction with the other teachers on this program in Costa Rica, a difference of opinion and way of doing things, and me feeling a little awkward and partly blaming myself for not asserting myself more, but just also, it might have even been petty on my part, but there was friction and discomfort. Well, I found out that very person was in this course, as well as the person who would be my direct supervisor in terms of the program coordinating. And I felt my communication with him had gone a little bit off kilter as well. Both of them were here, and it made me think this morning, well, gee, maybe I shouldn't go. Well, the right thing, of course, was to go, and I got along fine, especially with the woman who I had felt I had more problems with. I tell you this because Sometimes we make things bigger than they are, or we let our emotions get out of hand. We feel somebody said something to us that we take one way, and even if they meant it another way entirely, we feel hard done by, or we've been hurt somehow, and we get our shorts in a knot, our feathers are ruffled. And I was able to dismiss all of that today, to let it go. You know, just boom, moved on, past that. It's done. It's the past. It's almost like it's imaginary to start with. And I'm very, very happy about that. And again, it's one of those things as if, well, it was just meant to be, dude. You were supposed to go to this course, and I was. We had enough time during the course to practice techniques of, you know, mindfulness and hear a little bit about the research and why it's important and what part of the brain does what. So it was a really good, well worthwhile program. I'm glad for all the right reasons I went, because I went for all the right reasons to learn more and so on. I had a really nice talk with one of the people who delivered the program right at the end as I was leaving. I found a potential host family. Everything was win-win-win. And I said, you know, I'm going to spend the rest of the afternoon, because we didn't get out of lunch till almost 2. I'm going to spend the rest of the afternoon in Bluffers Park. Might even have a toke. So here I am. Here I sit. And I'm trying to tell myself, man, you're overdoing these podcasts, dude. You sent out 2 last week, back to back. And here we go on number, Dixon Jane's number 459. And that means there's only another 40 to go after this. And that's okay. Yesterday was also a special day, Sunday. I went into my office. Been doing a lot of reading. I do read 4 or 5 books at a time, and that's fine. And I am really enjoying the book about Millbrook, where Tim Leary had his If Foundation. Although it turns out the character who's telling the story, by this point, Leary wasn't there all that often. He was often in off to Florida or somewhere else. So he's sort of a much of a secondary figure. But it is a true story about the ashram that was set up at this Millbrook estate. And it's just one more window into that world of the 60s that I'm just totally loving. Now, what was I just saying that I... why yesterday was a good day? Yes! But I guess I'm not going to tell you. I came up with a title for my book. And this is becoming more and more real. And something I'm feeling stronger about and more encouraged to go ahead with. But I'm going to leave that with you. I'm not going to tell you, because there's really no point in that. Just to say that I'm still thrilled about how all the pieces seem to be fitting together. That's actually the logo on my new business card. It's jigsaw puzzles on one, pieces separate on one side and joined together on the other. And it's kind of a nice, very fitting image. So I'm going to leave you there. I'm going to just, I'm on this perfect spot up on a hill overlooking all the other nice places I could be sitting. And there's a voice saying, well, go sit by there. That looks really nice. And then, oh no, what about over there by the water? That's nice too. And the other voice is, well, just stay where you are until you really have to leave. And that's how we have to live our lives, you know? Don't just arbitrarily rush off, try this, try that, do this, do that. Slow down a little and wait until you're called. And if you're not called, then get up and walk away. All right, leaving it there. That's all for now. It's about 10 minutes, and I'm going to come back to you in a little bit, maybe from today, maybe not. Scarborough Dude, signing out. Bye for now. Here's the airplane. can't hear him now, but I've got to tell this story. Since the last clip, I've sat here for 2 hours in the sunshine, reading from Timothy Leary in The Madman of Millbrook, dozing off a little and just enjoying the peace of this park. And some guy in a boat has shown up, and I'm not talking about a big boat, I'm talking about a little motorboat, with the radio going full blast. Now, he's deliberately come to the beach area and has stopped the boat just outside from the beach so that everybody in this whole section of park has to hear him. It's as if, I mean, picture it, like we're on the coastline, and it's a beautiful little cove, miles of beach, and then there's just this spit that we're sitting on that protects the yacht club. And this guy came right dead center so that everybody in every fucking direction would have to hear him, his noisy motorboat, and his music. Now, he's just shut it off now as I started to talk to him. Maybe somebody was aiming a rifle at him, which I'd be tempted to do, just to shoot out the gas tank, you know, like they do in the movies. But I don't understand that kind of stupidity. It's like on the level of littering, where somebody just has their Tim Hortons, sits at a bench, and throws it down, when everywhere in this park, within sight, are recycle bins and garbage bins. And this person, they're not out on the boat, they're not enjoying the water, they're not enjoying Lake Ontario. They've aimed their boat at the beach, so everybody here has to see that they have a boat, we don't, and they have control of a very loud music system. It's just, you think, well, what makes you function as a human? What goes through what little brain there is that you have? This is your amusement, I guess, and I guess, sadly, this is maybe true for I'll limit it to North America for now, for much of the North American mindset, to show off, to put yourself front and center. You know, it's like flaunting your wealth. This isn't wealth, this is just a cheap, shitty boat. I promised myself during this class today on mindfulness that I would try and redirect some of the energy and anger I feel towards these Boko Haram and these terrorist bombings and so on, and the people are full of hate and religious fanatics, that I would try instead to channel the energy to the victims and send out, they taught us how to do that, you know, to sort of sending out well wishes to people who are in pain or suffering, and to be a little more compassionate in your life, a little more thoughtful, a little more caring. And rather than me focus on the hatred, I should channel it towards sending calm vibes and peace to those suffering. I, you know, of course, my good wishes are not going to reach Nigeria, but the intention is rather, and maybe it's a better way to expend your energy rather than channeling it through hate. Okay, they're going to make another circle of the beach. Here we go. They're just going in tight circles now. Now, some people would find that, gee, isn't that a lot of fun? But to me, it's like the sea-doos. Blow them out of the water. All right, that's it. Sorry, maybe I contradicted myself there. I focused on the negative rather than, gosh. Honestly, this is one of these perfect days. A little bit of a breeze. Sunny, not hot, although they say it's going up to 29 today. But a free afternoon. I've brought my old folding chair. I've got this wonderful book that I'm already halfway through. I'm up to almost page 200. You know, just the joy of reading, and I'm picturing these times, these people, dropping acid in this mansion in the middle of the woods in upstate New York. It's kind of interesting. Okay, back a little later. That's all, just a diversion. Yeah, I'm back again, back with my book. It says in the front, all rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced, stored in any retrieval system, or transmitted in any form by any means electronic, mechanical, photocopy, recording, or otherwise, without written permission of the author, except for the purpose of reviews. So consider this a book review. I'm talking about the book Timothy Leary and the Madman of Millbrook, a true novel by Theodore P. Druck, I guess, D-R-U-C-H. I got a good deal on it, on buying it through Amazon. I recommend you go there to buy it. And just to give you an example of what kind of thing you'll find in this book, he's talking about Allen Ginsberg, wonderful passage there. And then he goes on to another little story. And this is just to give you a sample of the writing so you can judge for yourself whether this is something you would like to buy for your collection. It's almost 400 pages long. And there are a lot of very interesting pictures in the back that I haven't even looked at yet. One of the favorite tales in our folklore concerned a visit he made to Millbrook. On the Thanksgiving just before I arrived, this is Allen Ginsberg, the place was packed, Thanksgiving dinner was being prepared with five or six turkeys, and Tim and the others were playing touch football on the lawn. Ginsberg was holding curtains, playing his accordion-like harmonium, and finger cymbals, and Balaram gave a dance recital. Also in attendance was a Canadian reporter named Tom Koch, K-O-C-H, who had produced a documentary about LSD for the CBC. Now he wanted to do one about Millbrook, and Tim had invited him to come and check the place out. He'd never taken any acid and claimed that he was just naturally high. He didn't need any drugs. Tim and Rosemary, his paramour at the time, had made him welcome and offered him a drink from their stash of premium liquors. He declined. By the way, I should know that, let you know, there's an ashram here with a lot of hangers-oners, including the guy who wrote this book. And then Timothy Leary had his sort of inner circle of the if, you know, that foundation up on the third floor of the building. So he kept separate. It wasn't that Timothy Leary was always there all the time for everybody. If you were doing an acid trip, only a few select people would actually get to do them with Leary. So anyway, they offered him a drink. He declined. Apparently he had spotted some Napoleon brandy and when alone, copped a sifterful. What he didn't know was that the brandy also contained the League's acid. That's the League of Spiritual Discovery. The karma for his theft was immediate. He went racing through the halls, bouncing off the walls, screaming, "I've been violated," at the top of his lungs. People chased him around, trying to calm him. But he got out of the house and made for the road. The last thing they needed was this nut creating a scene in Millbrook, the nearest town. And he was chased all over the property until he was finally subdued and led back into the house. He ran into the small butler's pantry, tucked beneath the main staircase on the first floor, found an old steamer trunk, climbed up on it and assumed a fetal position, whimpering. Ginsberg followed him, sat down on the floor, and began to chant mantras. As many others as possible also crammed into the small space, just a glorified closet, really, and everyone else filled the foyer and took up the chanting. It went on for 2 hours. Everyone sat on cushions on the cold and drafty floor, eating Thanksgiving dinner from plates on their laps, while Allen continued to try to calm the hapless reporter. He did eventually calm down and finally relaxed, going with the flow. "Jesus Christ," he explained later, "I had no fucking idea." He never made his documentary. So that's just one of the many anecdotes you'll find in this book, which I am racing through. And that anybody who's interested in this history, there are many, many others. Was it the White Hand Society? And you've heard me talk about them before on this book, on this podcast. Such an interesting time of history. yeah, Timothy Leary. All right, back at you later.
Those gentle voices I hear explain it all with a sigh. Reflections of my mind. It's just the kind of day to leave myself behind. So gently swaying through the fairyland of love. If you would just come with me and see the beauty of Tuesday afternoon.
I didn't even give myself time to collect my thoughts. None whatsoever. I'm on the back deck. This is something I rarely do, but it's one of those opportunities. It's 4:30 on a Thursday afternoon. There goes my Twitter. Probably MMD again. I'll have to block that guy. My wife is still at work, and my son has just taken the car and gone to get it washed. There is so much I have to get into right now, and I don't know where to start, but let's start with my son. I listened to Up in This Brain podcast today, Jason, and he had played a clip that I had played about when I had thought I had really fucked up with my wife and son, and I had. It's not that I thought I had. But the one thing about the Dixon Janes podcast, it is always full of ups and downs. And whenever there's a low point or the pendulum has swung one way, it always swings back the other way. And the past few days, Things have been great. My son has finished exams at college. My wife and I wanted to farm him out west. Just send him out there. Buy a ticket. Go. He's not so keen on that. He's determined he's going to get a job here, and that's fine. I hope he does. That's the name of the game. But he's taken to enjoying driving the car. And I'm really happy about that because it gives him a certain independence. And so today's deal was, hey, find the shop vac that I know we've got somewhere. Clean out the inside because I fill the car or containers full of wood chips that were giveaways. And it just made a mess, you know. And I am just a slob when it comes to my car. I just throw stuff into the back seat. But anyway, I thought it would be a good thing for him to do. He is now doing that. All those things I said before about, you know, him telling me I never learn and miscommunication. Wow. Sometimes going through the rough spots are what take you to the next level. And it's been great. Last night was one of the most enjoyable nights I've had in a long time. And it was the two of us sat together in the living room on that big, dirty big screen and watched, kept switching from the Blue Jays to the Los Angeles Chicago game. The Blue Jays won 9 straight, or have won 9 straight. And this was a beautiful game to see. It was tied 2-2 at the bottom of the ninth. And a guy bunted. There was an error. First base missed the ball. And somebody came sliding in on home plate. And they won the game. It was such a thrill. Like, I'm not a sports guy. I don't normally. But since getting this great big TV in the living room, it's really a pleasure to watch sports. You can see the action. It's just amazing what a difference it makes. You know, I'm thinking of the old black and white TV in the corner of the room. You had to get up to change channels, and suddenly you've got this big beast that brings it right into your face. So switching that, and then just talking, you know, and him asking me about certain rules, and, you know, I don't know all that much, but I can certainly bluff my way through any conversation when I have to, or guess, or make me think about it and find out. And it was just fun. It was sharing. It was not anything heavy, and that's exactly what he had asked for the other day when we went on that ill-fated drive. So, it's a complete and utter turnaround, and it's been beautiful. And the other day, he got up early. My God, he was up 5:30, and which, you know, was the extreme. But I thought he had not gone to bed all night. No. He went to bed early. He was tired. And so he's on a new pattern, and things just, it's just a change, okay? So I want to park that in case I had left everybody with the sour note that I'm just such an asshole, I never will learn. Well, hey, you do learn from your mistakes, so you certainly try to. And this isn't to say it's all going to be smooth sailing. We had a big difference of opinion today on certain things to do with fairness. I attended another information session today. I've been going to a lot. I'm going to another one tomorrow. This is a call for proposals for global citizenship and equity learning experiences, the thing I went to Costa Rica on with my college. And one of the things that we want to define here is, what is social justice? Because the whole thing is supposedly based on a platform. They give a budget, a fixed budget, a generous budget, if you can come up with a proposal to take 10 students and 3 staff members off somewhere, anywhere, to come out with something that meets their requirements. And one of the requirements is, of course, it's got to fit in keeping with the definition of social justice. This comes from Berkeley in California. Social justice is a process, not an outcome, which, 1, seeks fair redistribution of resources, opportunities, and responsibilities, 2, challenges the roots of oppression and injustice, 3, empowers all people to exercise self-determination and realize their full potential, 4, and builds social solidarity and community capacity for collaborative action. My son was not very impressed with that definition, thought it was all bullshit, and to some degree I believe he's right, but I tried to, you know, put a positive socialist, not communist, spin on this thing, but we were able to have a discussion. Anyway, I have ideas. I think I've mentioned that to you before, of things that I might like to do on this field. So I got a lot of work if I'm going to actually make something happen. But the wheels are turning, and as I've said before, whether or not something comes of this doesn't really matter. It's the doing so often that counts, that really has value. Okay, so put that out of the way. I did finish the book on Millbrook. The fellow who wrote the book was not a big fan of Timothy Leary, so Leary comes out as a bit of an asshole, but he would not be the first person to say that about Leary. He's still my hero, or a hero of mine, put it that way. It was an amazing thing. This is almost a 400-page book, and I finished that in a matter of days. It's when I'm interested in something, bam, I'll go for it. So the next one, besides all the reading I have to do for the course I'm taking tonight on group and family counseling, I've got conversations about Leary, the Harvard experiments, Millbrook, and the 60s, called Birth of a Psychedelic Culture. And that's Ram Dass and Ralph Metzner. These were the movers and the shakers back then. It's absolutely wonderful. So I'm going to get into that next. I've got a ton more, assignments due. But today in the mail, another book. And if you don't mind, I'm going to share this with you. I've already touched on this, but the timing seems almost uncanny. So much the timing is so congruent, if that can be the case, that I've had to put on my beads. The beads I bought in Costa Rica, because I feel like wearing beads today. It's a bit of an affectation, I have to admit, own up to. I like the looks of them. I'll look in the mirror and think, oh, that looks really nice. I got a brown shirt on and these lovely earth-toned beads, and one of them is just a big seed. And it's a bit of vanity, and that's okay, because it actually does make me feel different. It gives me this identity of the young man I used to be back in university in the, starting 68, going on to 72. That time in Montreal when I was a young man, and my God, I'm so grateful for those days of being an undergrad majoring in English psychology. But you go ahead another year, I left there, went to Vancouver, and ended up, I guess, as a result of a bad acid or mescaline or whatever it was that was in that capsule that we took that caused me to have some very sick thoughts, bordering on suicidal thoughts, that my girlfriend at the time suggested, I think you really should talk to a professional about this. And I did. And they directed me towards this program I've mentioned this many times, but I keep recircling back because it is important. And the Timothy Leary, the beads, the bad acid, and the integrated psychotherapy all joined together as one, because in that year, I believe it'd be the summer of 1973, I joined this group. Now, the book I'm holding by Ferdinand Knobloch, MD, and Jirina Knobloch, MD, his wife, is exactly a book based on the very group that I went through. In fact, there's a whole chapter called a day house, and day house is the place where we did had our therapeutic sessions 5 days a week. I went on for a total of almost 8 weeks. You're supposed to finish at six, but I was slow. Day house in Vancouver is a section, and I've already skimmed through, and I kept looking. Oh my God, is one of those my quotes? Because they're just doing anonymous quotes from the people who were involved. One of them actually sounded very much like something I might have written. But that may be wishful thinking on my part. But it describes in detail what we did on a daily basis. And it's bringing it back. Like, they describe the staff, the three people. Now, I can picture them exactly. And here it is in this book on page 177, a description of the staff. Day House has 3 full-time therapists. At present, the senior therapist has a master's degree and wide background in psychology and related fields. I remember her. The second therapist is a certified nurse. Oh, she was so sweet. The third, a work therapist, is a college graduate experienced in working with people without formal mental health training. And I remember him, Angelo. The personal qualities of the staff, their emotional balance, high stress tolerance, mutual loyalty, ability to lead without being authoritative, capacity to take full responsibility for, and at the same time always be a part of the patient's group, their interest in work, and their dedication are more important than any educational background. And those are the people I had the pleasure of working with. So this book starts off in 71. I guess it was published finally in 77. I bought it used in a warehouse. It still smells like it's been sitting for 30, 40 years in a warehouse somewhere. That's just fine. But describes everything we went through. And I read it and it brings back that whole period. And I'm, when I tell you this, it's to tell you that this changed my life. That experience was the thing that opened up to me that I wasn't such a mess, that everybody is fragile, that everybody is delicate and perhaps broken in places and in need of help, and that we should never be ashamed or try to hide our fears and anxieties, that we can deal with them, because if we have it, that means somebody else has it, and somebody else and somebody else. They talk about the very end, the graduation. Like, I had completely forgotten about that. And it was just amazing. Yeah. That's right. That's what we did. They talked about the skits we had to perform, and I remember those skits because I really hammed it up. Breaking in and breaking out. This is the ceremony that developed rather spontaneously at the day house. This was on the grounds of the Health Science Center Hospital. It was an old frat house that had been run down, and we got to live in and fix up. Now, we went home at the end of the day and came back the next morning, Monday to Friday. Friday afternoons after the play, the group welcomes new members who have just completed their first week and bids farewell to those who have finished their treatment at day house. No therapist is present since the staff are simultaneously involved in their feeling group. That's my neighbor. At first, new members have to break into the group. Members of the group form a closed circle holding hands. One after the other, the new members have to penetrate the circle. After they have succeeded, they join the group in dancing. Now, I remember that. And it was like, what a wonderful... This is psychotherapy, right? But what a... This is not lying on a doctor's couch. This is a group of people who formed a strong bond, and they're holding hands, and they won't let you in until you find some way of breaking through that group and either breaking apart somebody's hands or crawling under or somehow working your way into the group. So symbolic, but so important and so satisfying when you made it in. The other part of the ceremony is the trust to jump. Each new member jumps from the stage into the outstretched hands of all the group members, okay? The patients who are leaving present a written statement on what the day house gave to me. Now, I wish I had my diaries from those days. I almost, many years ago, I wanted to go back and demand they return my journal. It's a missing part, and it's a piece that I would like to have had when it comes to writing my book, which remind me to get to later. In the statement, they summarize their experiences and the changes in their lives which they have undergone during their treatment. Afterwards, They go to each of the group members to say their goodbyes. And I remember that. You had to go face to face, one by one by one. And some people you connected with well, some people you didn't like and you didn't feel too close to, but you still had to face each and every one. When all this is completed, the old patients get a trust lift, being lifted from the floor in the outstretched hands of the whole group. The group then sings a song that has been adopted as the day house song. So long, it's been good to be with you. Usually adding new stanzas such as been good to cry with you, fight with you, dance with you, play with you, etc. And I remember that too. We're talking, boys and girls, over 40 years ago, me as a young man, you know, crying. You cried in this group, believe me. You didn't get into the group unless you cried. Parting with old group members is usually associated with deep emotions and tears. Sometimes when several popular members leave, the group goes through a period of sadness and depression, like mourning. In this regard, parting with old members represents an element in the Day House, which models real life. Amazing, amazing, amazing. I mean, this is a piece of psychotherapeutic history, and I got to be a part of that, and I'm mighty proud of it, and I find it fascinating that a full 40 years later, I am now taking courses in counseling with the hope that someday I might be able to help somebody. Now, I will never do anything quite like this at all. And in fact, I may never counsel anybody at all, but I'm just happy to have it, happy to be doing it, happy to be learning about it. Shall I read to you from the inside flap of the book? Integrated Psychotherapy, that's the name of the book, represents an ambitious and original attempt to unify both theoretically and practically the field of psychotherapy, behavior change, and personality growth. Its aim is an effective program accessible to all needing help. That was me. This book provides a stimulating model for thinking about and conducting psychotherapy, as well as a rich source of ideas for expanding and improving whatever forms of therapy the reader currently practices. Now, I'm going to stop there. I'm not going to read the whole rest to you. It's just that this came today, the day I'm going in for my course. It's just touching me that everything seems to be pulling together, to be joining in this circle somehow. Every aspect of my life, the fact that I'm ordering these old books on the history of Millbrook or Timothy Leary, that I'm going into this therapy, reading new things, getting new ideas, but also going back to this old thing that I've been through. The fact that I'm looking forward to possible educational programs at college for the fun of it, for the challenge. Oh. And of course, neglecting what I need to be doing, and that is finding host families for my students this summer. Uh-oh! Reality rears its ugly head once again. But I needed to do that. Now, there's one more thing. Oh, yes, my voice. I have started writing. I'm working on the first chapter of the book. Oh, here's my son, so I'm going to stop. Because I don't podcast in front of my children yet. I've got a start. I know where I want to start. I've done the first page. I'm using Apple's iBook or something as a possible starting point. Something I can edit and publish. But the question is finding my voice, and I've done several variations of the same story, but in a different voice. And part of it is I feel I need to be me, the me that's on this podcast, the one talking to you now, that because this is the voice I've worked 10 years to develop, and it needs to translate itself into writing. So I've got to be a little bit, what is the word? Maybe flippant at times, but not too flippant. I've got to allow myself all the freedom that I need, not to be tied down or structured or too formal. I need to include humor. I need to be free to write in the manner I choose, to tell the stories I choose without worrying about what the reader thinks, the same way I do this podcast without worrying too much about you, the listener. So all those things echo. Anyway, listen, my son's back with the car. I want to talk to him. It's a 20-minute mark. I needed to get this out. I hope you enjoyed the two songs. I was sure I had included Big Fat Fuck by Ween in the previous podcast, but when I went through my list of all the songs I've played, I couldn't find it. It might have been in the background. I've probably talked over it, but I absolutely love that song. Feeding like a big fat fuck. And, of course, to balance it out, a lovely tune by the Moody Blues, which ties into the Timothy Leary part of the story. So there you go. That's it. Enjoy it for what it's worth. And I'm going to finish this one off and get it out to you real soon. Bye for now. Oh, Back and we're winding down. I got about 9 minutes left in this podcast, so if you're still with me, here we are. It's 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and I am in Bluffers Park, and I have been here since 8 o'clock this morning. I came to attend our college. I had a special program for our department, and it was called Recharge and Renew, and it ended just a few minutes ago with a retirement party for one of the teachers. And it was quite an experience. I'm really glad I went. We did a session of Tai Chi, which I loved. First time to actually do Tai Chi with a master. Okay, who's got a show on television, I think, or somewhere. Maybe cable, I don't know. But he was very good. And that was a delight. And it was just kind of funny standing in an area with, you know, about 30 other teachers of all ages, shapes, sizes, colors, everybody trying to do Tai Chi and try not to laugh. That was worthwhile. We had a very interesting talk by the vice president academic, I guess, about the future of the college, what our goals and our aims are, a lot of information there, which I find interesting. Speeches from our deans and our various departments. And then another session, oh yes, on coaching training. Well, yeah, how to be a coach, actually a life coach, and some aspects of that. There's only one thing I got, well, two of them. Here's a quote. Your eyes will adjust to the level of deficiency present. Your eyes will adjust to the level of deficiency present. Now, I guess that means, you could interpret that to mean that you're going to accept your limitations and stay there, as opposed to trying to rise above them and set a higher goal, you know, something like that. Lots of stuff there. One thought I found interesting, and this does not come from Algoma University or from Dr. Dave Broadbeck, the behavioral psychologist. Somebody, somehow, figured out the average person has 85,000 thoughts a day. Now, that doesn't sound like an exaggeration to me at all. 85,000 thoughts a day. So you figure out how they counted, calculated. anyway, but the interesting part, of course, that figure was 70,000 of those 85,000 are negative. And I thought about that, and I thought, yeah, that's probably not too far off either. Negative in just in a sense of, oh, I didn't do that. Oh, I should have done that. Why didn't I do that? Oh, what are they going to think about that? And, you know, all the things we throw at ourselves. So I'm going to leave that one with you. You know, challenge me if you think that's wrong, but I found it interesting. And, of course, a lot of life is just learning to get past that bullshit. That's why I went to the mindfulness conference. I've been going to so many educational sessions through this college, even though I'm not teaching there anymore and don't even have a contract and won't until the fall, if then. But I enjoyed joining in. The only thing is the retirement are for the full-time teachers, and there's a real club feeling. And they did a slideshow. It was funny. And you saw all these pictures of people in costumes and parties and hugging each other, and you realize, wow, I wasn't in any of those, and I never will be, because we are the part-time teachers, and we don't get invited to the private house parties. We're not on that list. And, you know, that's fine. I mean, I probably wouldn't want to go anyway, but it's just sort of an us and them are really, they are the us, and we are the fringe. And I spoke to a few today who are part-time staffers like myself, and you really do feel, wow. For the younger ones, like, will I ever get hired on? Some people have been there decades and still don't have permanent status. And the college, of course, in cutting corners, they'll find ways not to take on any more full-time staff. But that's not what this is about. It was a kind of a celebration. I did push myself to go. Like, yeah, go, you know. And I'm very glad of it. You always learn something just even watching the human interactions. I mentioned before a wonderful man who always wears a lovely colored turban. And I managed to get him to sit beside me today. And as always, very entertaining conversations and just a very bright man whose company I enjoy so much. And I guess that's part of the richness of the college. It is multicultural. It is highly educated, very intelligent group of people. I guess this gathering towards the end of the retirement part felt very much like a union rah-rah-rah gathering as well. They feel pretty strongly about that. And, of course, that's what's given them the wonderful benefits they all have. And, of course, that's what makes the rest of us feel like shit. We had another exercise, part of this life coaching, where you had to look at your job, various 8 aspects of satisfaction with your job, 8 aspects to do with your life. Now, I don't have the sheet in front of me, but... And you sort of plotted them on a scale of 1 to 10, and then joined them all up and see what kind of shape it makes. Well, my job wheel of life, my job wheel, was almost fully circular, except that all the circle, the outside perimeter is 10. Mine was all at 6 consistently in terms of job preparation, readiness, satisfaction, all the other things. Nothing got beyond 6. But it was consistent. Whereas my life scale, there were a lot of, 9s, and I could even say 10s in terms of friendship and levels. So that's actually not so bad. So I'm not doing so well on my job. I still get hired back every year, every semester. But on my life, wow. That was a very big circle, almost matching, almost high on most aspects. The only dip it took was, of course, with family, where I just, as you know, feel I have to do a little better. But we're moving in that direction. We're coming along. I don't know what else to share with you. I didn't bring any book along to read quotes. But man, oh man, do I love that stuff on the people who did do a lot of LSD, and I know I don't know if to any of you this sounds like, oh, he's just talking about dropping some LSD and having fun, party. And that's not it at all. And that's never what it was meant to be. This was genuine. And the reason Leary and Alpert and Ralph Mentzer and all these other people, doctors, others, were doing this stuff was because they really did believe, fully experienced, a higher level of consciousness, a deeper understanding, which not one of them would say this is false. It wasn't about the hallucinations or the paranoia or the fear that sometimes comes with an acid trip, the anxiety. It was about these states where you get to where you realize, yeah, that is, we are connected, this and that. And these are not illusions. This is real. And this is why I go so crazy when I think about the power of the American government to say, whoa, we don't want people doing this. Bam, it's banned. This drug is illegal. You cannot do it. You cannot do research. You cannot do study. I was just reading about a guy who made a considerable amount in England and got a 20-year jail sentence. This is a while back. He just got out after serving maybe 12 years or something. I don't know. But... you know, people who do horrific crimes. And this isn't heroin. This isn't an addictive thing. This is for mind expansion. And I guess I sound like a broken tape when I keep coming back to that, but it is why I'm fascinated. I try to work it into every conversation. And I suppose I'm going to have to let go of that sooner or later. I'm certainly not ready to do any more. I said to myself, let's head back to the car, will you? Shall we? Too much baggage, too much stuff. Maybe something milder to start. Maybe a little bit of mescaline, if you knew what it was. You know, some mushrooms. But, man, when will that time come? Will that time come? And or will I just end up a basket case if I ever do? And that's not what this is about at all. So, shit, what a lousy note to end on. I'm sorry. Maybe I do have to do a little bit of reprogramming and shake that. It's just that I find this stuff fascinating, reading the first-hand accounts of these people. And they're not all going on about their trip. They're going on about the power of the 60s. Okay, CNN last night, first episode, The Power of Television, and their new series, The 60s. It was very interesting. I saw the Smothers Brothers on, and I just went nuts. Roland Martin's laughing, and I felt so connected. Wow, these are my people, the Smothers Brothers. I love them. I had an album by them even before they had the TV show, Smothers Brothers at the Purple Onion. I loved the Smothers Brothers. So I'll leave it at that. And, of course, here's the connection. Tommy Smothers in the room with John and Yoko when they had their bed in for peace in Montreal with Timothy Leary. Okay? All the pieces fit. Thank you. And going to go home, put this out, and get back to you and start another podcast right after this one. Bye for now. See you next week. You got something to say, Goose? Thank you. Thank you.